You're listening to YAP, Young and Profiting Podcast, a place where you can listen, learn, and profit. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Hala Taha, and on Young and Profiting Podcast, we investigate a new topic each week and interview some of the brightest minds in the world. My goal is to turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your everyday life, no matter your age, profession, or industry. There's no fluff on this podcast, and that's on purpose. I'm here to uncover value from my guests by doing the proper research and asking the right questions. If you're new to the show, we've chatted with the likes of ex-FBI agents, real estate moguls, self-made billionaires, CEOs, and best-selling authors. Our subject matter ranges from enhancing productivity, how to gain influence, the art of entrepreneurship, and more. If you're smart and like to continually improve yourself, hit the subscribe button because you'll love it here at Young and Profiting Podcast. This week on YAP, we're chatting with Marissa Peer, therapist, best-selling author, and keynote speaker. Her mission is to spread the message that there are simple, rapid, and effective techniques everyone can use to change their life. As the award-winning founder of Rapid Transformational Therapy, or RTT, Marissa created a complete solution-based treatment therapy that's changed the lives of tens of thousands of people via its training program. RTT draws out the principles of hypnotherapy, psychotherapy, neuro-linguistic programming, cognitive behavioral therapy, neuroscience, and neuroplasticity to deliver fast, effective, and long-lasting results. Marissa also dedicates her time to developing powerful self-hypnosis programs designed to release common blocks people face in their every area of life, from self-confidence, weight, relationships, finances, and so much more. Marissa is a best-selling author of 5 books and the creator of the iconic I Am Enough movement. This is part one of our 2-part series with Marissa. In today's episode, we discuss Marissa's upbringing, how to find those who believe in you, and how to self-soothe. We'll also talk about the importance of loving yourself, the power of hypnotherapy, and why statements of truth, also known as affirmations, can change your life. If you're looking to shift your perspective and the way you talk about yourself, you won't want to miss this episode. Be sure to keep an eye out for part 2 releasing later this week, where we'll talk about the difference between arrogance and confidence, how to overcome self-doubt, and so much more. Hi, Marissa. Welcome to Young and Profiting Podcast.
Hey, how are you?
Great. I'm so happy to have you. Okay, so you are really an exciting person that we are super looking forward to talking to because you are one of the most famous, you know, therapists that are out there. You are the therapist's therapist. And we like to start back in the beginning. We like to start from people's childhoods. So from my understanding, you had a bit of a lonely childhood. You were one of the middle children. Your father was a headmaster or a principal. Your mother was sick quite often, and you ended up feeling really alone. So I'd love to start off with understanding what your childhood was like and how that built your mindset up as a young adult and how that impacted you as a young adult and the stories that you told yourself because of the way that you grew up.
Yeah, you know, if you looked at my childhood from the outside, it looked amazing. We literally lived in a house with a white picket fence. My father was a head teacher, stroke prince. My mother was very beautiful. But that was on the outside. On the inside, it was a strange childhood. My father, bless his heart, because he was a good person, was just so interested in everyone else's kids. He was an amazing head teacher. He was one of those typical people where he was busy, busy looking after everyone else's children, and we were sort of emotionally neglected, I guess. And then my mother was another story. She was beautiful, completely unfulfilled. My father and her couldn't have been less suited if they tried. And she just was always sick. And I understood something very early in my childhood, because now I don't regret any of it, is that we pick a role. My mother picked the sick one. It met all her needs. My father picked the brilliant one. It met all his needs. And I became the caring one. I was always trying to get my parents to love me by tidying up the house, being good, being academic. My brother was also the brilliant one. And my sister, little sister, was the cute, pretty one. So I guess I learned something very early, which is what I call foreplay, the 4 roles we play in order to belong. And there's only 4. You're either sick, you're brilliant, you're caring, or you're the very rebellious one, which my brother became later, because you can change roles. And that stood me in great stead as a therapist, because I often say to my clients, look, which one are you? There's only four. And they go, wow, I never knew that. I was the sick one, and my sister, I hated her, but now I see that she was the competitive one, and most therapists are the caring one. So that was interesting for me. And something else was very interesting. I had a grandmother that loved me. She thought I was a genius. And I realized something else. You need one person in your life to believe in you. If you have that one person, you'll be okay. And I often think I would have been a juvenile delinquent if I hadn't had my grandmother. So my childhood taught me a lot. It taught me something else too, which is that the most important words you'll ever hear come from yourself. And not so much in my childhood, but in my young adulthood, I learned something else, which is whatever is going on around you, you have to choose whether to let it in or not. So when I was only like 17 or 18, I remember being told, look, you can never have children and you have to accept that. And I heard a voice in my head go, don't let that in. Do not let that in. That's not up to them. That's up to you. And that voice came back many years later when I was told I had cancer twice. And I heard the voice again going, don't let that in. That's not up to them. It's up to you. And they say things like, well, you know, this is the terror time. And my doctor actually did this. He went, it has your address. It knows where you live. It's probably going to come back. And I thought, wow, what a thing to say. But I thought, no, you're not going to tell me that. I'm going to make a decision. And so my childhood wasn't horrible. I mean, I see people every day with the most dreadful, appalling, horrific childhood. My childhood was a middle class. We had a nice house. We had nice stuff. We got fed every day. We had heating. We had food. But it was an emotionally slightly neglected childhood. But I don't regret any of it because it made me, I guess, understand people. But I did. It was a lonely childhood. I didn't feel special. I didn't feel smart. I didn't feel attractive. I didn't feel interesting. I didn't feel anything. But that also led me to what I now believe is the core of most people's problems, which is that I'm not enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm the head teacher's daughter. I'm supposed to be brilliant. I'm definitely not pretty enough. I'm not interesting enough. But I realized that I could change all of that by changing what I said to myself. And then I went from feeling like this geeky, freaky, hideous kid to someone who thought, no, I'm pretty good, actually. I'm smart, I'm interesting, I'm attractive. I understood, and I wish we were all taught this in schools, that the most important words you'll ever hear are your words. And you can't go through life going, hey, could you out there make me believe I'm attractive or interesting or worthy? We have to do it ourselves. So now I'm glad I had that childhood because I learned what I teach other people. Do not give anyone else agency over your life or your thoughts or your beliefs. You make your beliefs, and then your beliefs turn right around and make you, and you get the choice of making your beliefs. But I get the most interesting thing from my childhood of all, though, was this scene that was played out. My mother tried to kill herself several times. She would throw herself down the stairs. She was in many ways hysterical. She was a lovely person, but she was so unfulfilled. And my father would just pick up his briefcase and go to work. And I remember thinking, oh, that's what you do. When you're in this crazy relationship, you need a great career because it fulfills you. And I remember thinking that. But my brother told me that he looked at that scene and thought, you never marry someone beautiful because they're hysterical. And my sister said she looked at it and thought, wow, you must marry someone who loves you more than you love them. And then they won't leave you. They won't pick up their briefcase and go to work. So three kids saw the same scene played out every week. But we each formed a different belief. I believed you need a great career. My brother believed don't marry anyone beautiful. My sister believed marry someone who loves you more than you love them. And that was probably one of my key learnings, that it isn't events that affect you. It's the interpretation you put on them, which you are free to change at any time. And so for years, I had relationships that were deeply unfulfilling because I had a belief. Relationships go wrong. It was never if, it was always when. You need a great career for when they go wrong. And the day I changed that belief, everything changed. So I really believe that what happens doesn't affect you as much as what you believe about what happens, and yet your beliefs are yours to change.
I think so many parts of that story are super interesting. The first one that's like my big takeaway is the fact that you said you just need one person to believe in you, and your grandmother was that one person for you. For me, it was my father. I mean, I was the black sheep growing up. All my siblings went to med school, and I was, you know, everybody thought that I was going to be a failure trying to be in radio and all these things. And turns out I was completely fine, but I just didn't fit in with my family. And so I know what you mean when you have that one person, it can really help push you along. What about if people don't have one person? What do they do if there's nobody who believes in them?
I guess you got to find that one person. You know, I met a girl recently whose father was a drug dealer, whose sister drowned in the pool because he was, and she said, you know, I had a teacher. I used to go to school early in the morning, and I hated the holidays, and that teacher believed in me. It's one of the reasons I became a therapist, because I wanted to be that person. And I have many kids who come in, suicidal teenagers, you know, kids that are cutting themselves. And I would say, listen, I believe in you. You're smart. You got something to offer the world. It's a real shame that your parents are on board with you. But, you know, you come through your parents, not from them. If your life was like a clock, your childhood is only the first 5 or 10 minutes, and you've got all the rest of it. And you have to find someone that believes in you. You know, we have a belief that it's always family, but it isn't. It could be a teacher. It could be a therapist. It could be a friend's parent. I have an amazing friend, and she's taken in other people's kids and raised them, and she's just the most extraordinary. She was adopted herself, and she really has a great heart for children. And so I believe that we have a whole tribe, and it's a matter of, where can you find someone? Can you join a group? Can you find them? Maybe you can find an old person in your community who can be like your mother. People write to me and go, hey, you're like my mum. I feel like you're my mum. Give me, like, I love that, because actually I would have loved to have more children. I had one, and I'm thrilled with my daughter. She's amazing in every possible way. But I love the fact that I'm now mum to lots of people. So I think you have to, first of all, believe there is someone out there to believe in you, and then go out and find them. But I think what people do is they go, I need a wife, I need a husband, I need a girlfriend, a boyfriend. And we put all our energy into finding someone to love us. We try so hard to make someone love us, when in fact, all you have to do is put the energy into loving yourself. Wake up every day, look in the mirror, and go, hey, I matter. I'm amazing. I'm lovable. I'm enough. If you could say every day just these four phrases, I'm lovable, I'm enough, I matter, I'm significant, say it, say it, say it, because your mind will let it in. It doesn't care or even know if what you tell it is right or wrong. When you fill yourself up from the inside, then go out with that sense of, I matter, I'm worthy. You'll find lots of people who want to be in your life and support you and believe in you, but it's hard for someone else to believe in you when you don't believe in you. So the easiest thing in the world is take a minute and think about the words you'd love to hear. We all have a vision of someone going, oh, you're the one, you're everything. And start saying it to yourself. Start saying those words to yourself. It doesn't matter who says them. They sink in anyway. And then you'll go out in the world and find people who believe in you. But you have to also believe in you to make that happen.
So when we're growing up, a lot of people say negative things around us that end up shaping our own internal stories. Whether your parent might have said that you were a mistake, or that your parents seem stressed out or talk negatively to you. And then you grow up believing all these negative things about yourself. So to some of the new parents that are out there, how do you recommend that we stop this negative conditioning with our children?
Yeah, you know, it's the saddest thing of all, because when a parent is mean to the child, down on the child, hard on the child doesn't stop loving the parent. They immediately stop loving themselves, because a child is very simple. It's like, I'm nice to my mommy, so therefore she'll be nice to me. But she's not nice to me. She's shouting, she's angry, so it must be my fault. You know, children must idealize their parents. They don't have any choice. They understand innately, I'm here and I can't look after myself, so I gotta make you love me, and then all my needs are met. And it's scary for a child to work out, oh, my mum's mentally ill, my dad's depressed, my mum's an alcoholic. And what the child does is they blame themselves. It's my fault dad's always at work. It's my fault mum's always crying. I got to be better. And they begin this huge effort to be perfect, which is impossible. So as a parent, understand that your children have to idolize you. And when you're hard on them, they blame themselves, and own it. Go up to them and go, you know, darling, today mummy was not nice, mummy. Today mummy was cross. Today daddy lost it. I'm so sorry. It was nothing to do with you. It was my little girl said to me one day, mummy, have you got your pyramid today? Because you're very cranky. Because I say, you know, darling, mummy wasn't nice today. Mummy had her period. It made me a bit cranky. I'm really sorry. It was not your fault. You're a great kid. And I would always own it and apologize. Not all the time, but I'd say, I'm sorry. Today I was a bit mean. Today I was distracted. One of my friends said, her little girl said, mummy, can I have a meeting with you? Because you have meetings all the time and I want to have a meeting with you. All she's saying is, can I spend some time with you? And then you have to say to your kid the thing they need to hear, you know, mummy goes to work. And I love work, but I don't love work more than you. It's when you say, I've got to go to work to pay the bills because you're so expensive. You can say, I love my job, but I don't love anything more than you. And when you grow up, you'll love your job. And then when you have a fight, you go, you know, mommy and daddy had a fight today. But hey, kids fight. It doesn't mean we don't love you. And if you break up, you say, this is nothing to do with you. We love you so much. I found the thing for me was to say to my daughter, there's nothing you could do in the whole world ever that would stop me loving you. If you did something bad, I would be upset, but I will always love you. I will never, ever not love you. And as my daughter grew up, I had so many kids would turn up at my house. My mum's thrown me out because she found me smoking. My mum's kicked me out in the middle of the night because she discovered I was having sex with someone. And I'd always said, I will never, ever kick you out of the house, no matter what you do. If you go to jail, I'll come to visit you. Obviously, I didn't want her to go to jail. But I think children have to know that you're their safe place. And I also think it's really important not to make them like you. Hey, we're academic. Why aren't you? We're sporty. Why aren't you sporty? You know, you can't say to the kid, what's wrong with you? You're not supposed to give birth to yourself. Your children challenge you. I said to my daughter, hey, you know, you're my teacher because you're teaching me, because you're so different. I mean, you're teaching me how to be with someone who isn't like me. And I was a single parent, and that's difficult because, I mean, in many ways it's wonderful, but it's also difficult because you don't have another person. When I'm having a bad day, my little girl didn't have another parent to go to go, oh, mommy's just having a bad day, let you and I hang out. But it's a great thing to be a parent. You just have to understand that children are fragile and they get very damaged by shouting, screaming, and blaming. But they don't need to live in a perfect world. And as long as you can own it and say, this was nothing to do with you, you're great, you're amazing, you are a source of joy. It's my greatest pleasure to be your parent. Being your parent is my joy. It's amazing. I love raising you. And then say things like, you know, you're so funny. You're so interesting. You're so cute. I love you because you're you. So you can, the most important thing as a parent is not to give your kids organic broccoli. It's to give them high self-esteem. And you do that by making them feel good about themselves, not excessively, but just loving them for who they are. I can tell you, I had so many failures as a parent, so many. But you just got to pull it back and be great with your children. It's never too late to sit down and say, you know, I made so many mistakes. None of that was your fault. It was my fault. And you are the joy of my life. And I'm so glad I had you. And it really makes a difference.
I've heard you say before that we can be our own parent. If we didn't have the parent that said the right things to us, or if our parents passed away or whatever it is, you can go and be your own parent. What do you mean by that? What can we do to kind of self-soothe?
I actually believe two things. It's never too late to have a happy childhood, and it's never too late to be a parent to yourself. And again, I had very emotionally absent parents. But I began to understand what would I need from a parent. And, you know, what you need from a parent is reassurance. I love you. You're amazing. I'm so glad I had you. You're smart. You're interesting. My world is a better place just because you're in it. So again, think of the words you want to hear, and it's very simple. Start saying them over and over and over again, because again, the mind doesn't go, what were you saying that? It doesn't count. You know, if you put lotion on your skin, your mind doesn't go, hey, is that lotion from Prada? It must be really good. Or did you get it free on a plane? In which case it's rubbish. It lets the lotion in, and lotion nourishes dry skin. And I believe that words are a lotion for a chapped soul. And that when you say the right words, they sink in. They do the most amazing things. Words can heal. You know, you've heard that thing, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That's so wrong. Words can be so damaging, but also incredibly healing. So being a parent to yourself means saying what you want to hear. I was never told I was smart. That I was told that I would never, my parents told me to become a nanny because they thought I was so lacking in intelligence. Nothing wrong with being a nanny, by the way, but because I was also told I could never have children, I thought, oh, that's a great job for me. I'll be a nanny because I can't have children and I'm not very bright, and that's a good job. And now I think, wow, I'm so glad another voice in my head went, no, you can do something better. So be a loving parent to yourself every day. And that simply means imagining what you want to hear. It's what I call the missing bit of you. What are the words you'd love to hear? And don't go searching for someone else to put them in you, because that makes you needy. Put them into yourself. I always wanted to hear I was the favorite. And I was my grandmother's favorite. But I began to say one day as an experiment, I'm the favorite. I'm my parents' favorite. It was very peculiar because I really wasn't. My sister was my mother's favorite, and my brother was my father's favorite. My mom loved the cute, pretty last little baby, and my dad loved having a son. And my son went to a private school, and I didn't because I wasn't smart. But when I said it, what was so amazing to me was how quickly it became. All of a sudden, my father was like honing me like a laser, going, oh, you're amazing, and I'm so proud of you. And I thought, wow. It's almost scary how fast this works. And then I realized that actually I didn't really like that, because my father and mother both started to hone in on me more than my brother and sister. So I stopped saying that and thought, you know, I don't actually need it. And when my father began to say the things I'd wanted to hear my whole life, I'm so proud of you, you've done so well, I thought, isn't this weird? I've wanted this forever. Now I've got it. It's like, oh, I don't even need it because I've done it myself. I don't need my father to say it because I've said it to myself. And so if you've heard your mother or father say, you know, you were a mistake, we wanted a girl and you were the fourth boy, or vice versa, we really wanted a boy and you were the fifth girl, start saying, I was meant to be the fifth girl. I'm supposed to be a girl in here. And my parents are thrilled that I'm the fifth girl. Even if it's not true, keep saying it. My parents are so proud of me. My parents are so supportive. Even if it's not true, you may find that they change. But even if they don't, it won't matter, because it will be that balm for your soul that is so powerful.
Young and Profiters, I don't know about you, but I love to make my home someplace that I'm proud of. And that's why I spent a lot of time on my apartment trying to make it my perfect pink palace, all set with a velvet couch, an in-home studio, and skyline views of the city. And while I love my apartment, I can get really sick of it. I can get really uninspired. And if you work from home, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But the good news is, like many of you guys, I'm an entrepreneur, and that means that I can work from anywhere. And finally, I decided to make good use of my work flexibility for the first time. This holiday break, the sun was calling my name, so I packed my bags and my boyfriend, and we headed to Venice Beach, California. We got a super cute bungalow, and we worked from home for an entire month. The fresh air and slower pace helped to inspire some really cool new ideas for my business, and now I'm hitting the ground running in Q1. Airbnb was the one that helped me make these California dreams come true, and in fact, Airbnb comes in clutch for me time and time again. Whether it's finding the perfect Airbnb home for our annual executive team outing or booking a vacation where my extended family can fit all in one place, Airbnb always makes it a great experience. And you know me, I'm always thinking of my latest business venture. So when I found out that a lot of my successful friends and clients host on Airbnb, I got curious and I want to follow suit because it seems like such a great way to generate passive income. So now we have a plan to spend more time in Miami and then we'll host our place on Airbnb to earn some extra money whenever we're back on the East Coast. So I can't wait for that. And a lot of people don't realize they've got an Airbnb right under their own noses. You can Airbnb your place or a spare room if you're out of town for even just a few days or weeks. You could do what I did and work remotely and then Airbnb your place to fund your trip. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. That's airbnb.com/host to find out how much your home is worth. Hey, Yap Fam. Starting my LinkedIn Secrets Masterclass was one of the best things I've ever done for my business. I didn't have to waste time figuring out all the nuts and bolts of setting up a website that had everything I needed, like a way to buy my course, subscription offerings, chat functionality, and so on, because it was super easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your first product, finally taking your side hustle full time, or making $500,000 from your masterclass like me. And it doesn't matter if you're selling digital products or vegan cosmetics. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered as you scale. Stop those online window shoppers in their tracks and turn them into loyal customers with the internet's best converting checkout. I'm talking 36% better on average compared to other options out there. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., from huge shoe brands like Allbirds to vegan cosmetic brands like Thrive Cosmetics. Actually, back on episode 253, I interviewed the CEO and founder of Thrive Cosmetics, Carissa Bodnar, and she told me about how she set up her store with Shopify and it was so plug and play. Her store exploded right away. Even for a makeup artist type girl with no coding skills, it was easy for her to open up a shop and start her dream job as an entrepreneur. That was nearly a decade ago, and now it's even easier to sell more with less thanks to AI tools like Shopify Magic. And you never have to worry about figuring it out on your own. Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, so you can focus on the important stuff, the stuff you like to do. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/profiting, and that's all lowercase. If you want to start that side hustle you've always dreamed of, if you want to start that business you can't stop thinking about, if you have a great idea, what are you waiting for? Start your store on Shopify. Go to shopify.com/profiting now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Again, that's shopify.com/profiting. Shopify.com/profiting for a $1 per month trial period. Again, that's shopify.com/profiting.
I think that is such incredible advice. So let's talk about how you built up your confidence, because from my understanding, you were pretty insecure growing up. You mentioned before you felt lonely, you felt unattractive, you were told you couldn't have children at a young age. That probably was a big blow to your self-esteem, especially back then when, you know, women were just supposed to get married and have kids. So you probably felt insecure about that. Turned out to not even be true. So how did you rebuild your confidence? What was the turning point in your life?
You know, I definitely felt less than. I felt less interesting, less attractive, less everything. And I don't know the turning point. I just began to say the words I needed to hear. You know, I went to college. I was asked to leave college. My father was devastated by that, but I actually wasn't. I thought it was a great thing. I ended up going to LA and teaching aerobics for Jane Fonda. I was a bit of a renegade by then. I started off being the real caring kid, and then I became slightly rebellious, like, well, I'm just going to do what I want. And I loved teaching aerobics for Jane Fonda, but that was also a turning point because I saw all these amazing women, famous, beautiful, stunning women who'd go, oh, well, you know, I've got fat ankles or a bit of fat on my knees, and they were so down on themselves. And I think I understood again, wow, you know, they're all believing that if I had a perfect body, if my hair was perfect, and they were perfect, I would be happy. And that was another example of, wow, they're looking outside themselves. I just need to be 5 pounds lighter. I just need bigger breasts, smaller thighs. I've got to have big hair and a small butt, but I seem to have a big butt and thin hair, so therefore I don't count. And it was seeing how people were so hard on themselves and realizing that the answer was to go, yeah, you know, magazines say big hair, thin thighs, but I've got big thighs and thin hair, so I don't count. Yes, you do. You got to start just loving who you are. And I think what I also saw then was women who decided, I hate my body. So I'm going to punish it. I'm going to starve it. I'm going to deprive it of food. I'm going to force it to work out really hard for a long time. And it never worked. What worked was going, well, I love this body. Yeah, I got big thighs. I love them. I've got a big butt. I love my big butt. I love everything about myself. And it was this seeing how if you could love your body and go, I love all the things it does, that it would then it would change. I love my body, so I'm not going to fill it with donuts and garbage. I'm going to give it good food. And it was really this turning point of, wow, when you can love who you are, you start to treat yourself with respect. But when you come at it from self-hatred, it doesn't make you change. It makes you hate yourself more, you know. One of the fascinating things about the mind is whatever you look for, you will find. Whatever you focus on, you get more. So when you start to look for the flaws, I got cellulite, or I don't have a six-pack, I don't have a great job, I don't have a great car. When you look for that, you find more. When you look for what's great, wow, you know, I do have a little fat tummy, but my partner loves that. I do have not perfect skin, but who cares? It's really important to love all the things your body does. And to, when you fall in love with yourself, sounds very arrogant, but it isn't. It's a lifelong romance. It never forgets your birthday. It never disappoints you. You don't have to wax everything off, snip things off, inject things in. There's nothing to be taken away or added to make you love you. And falling in love with yourself is easy. It just starts with saying, you're a great person. You're nice. You're kind. You're warm. You know, no one goes, hey, I love you because you got thin thighs. They go, I love you because you're a good person, because you're funny, you're compelling, you're interesting. No one ever says, I love you because your skin is perfect. And if they did, well, who wants to be with someone like that? So it's so important to love ourselves, to help our kids love ourselves, and to get away from this self-hatred, forcing your body to be something else, forcing you to be someone else, forcing yourself to be what other people want, rather than just going, hey, I'm me, and if you love me, that's great. If you don't, well, that's okay, because I love me. Because when you become someone else to make someone love you, which I did a lot when I was growing up, I pretended to be this really confident, sparky person, which really wasn't me at all. But then when someone loves you, you think, yeah, but they don't even know who I am. I've played a whole game here. I've faked all of this. And now I don't know how to show this person who I really am. But when you start from who you really are, I'm a flawed person, and I'm going to have a great flawed relationship with another flawed person, because that's the best. You can ever be a flawed person having flawed relationships with flawed people. And it's so, you can actually start to breathe out and you go, yeah, you know, I'm not perfect. Neither are my friends or my partner. But I'm having a great time because people love me, not the me I think I got to pretend to be to get through life.
I think what you're saying is super important. It's so important to speak positively to yourself, to boost yourself up, to love yourself, and not to try to find love in other people. I think all the advice that you're giving is so great. So I know that when you were working at Jane Fonda's fitness center, you met a pioneer in hypnotism. What did you learn from him? And what is hypnotherapy for people who may not know?
You know, hypnotherapy is, people think it's about going to sleep. It's actually a sleep of the nervous system. You have a subconscious mind and a conscious mind. And the subconscious runs the show. And, you know, we keep trying to make these changes constantly. Imagine if you're scared of dogs, terrified of dogs. You may remember the little tiny chihuahua in their arms going, well, you know, this is a little cute thing and look, it's so lovely and I'm holding it and it will never hurt you. That's all logic. But the emotion is, no, that dog's going to bite me and attack me. So fears are emotional. Here's a rule of the mind. In a battle between logic and emotion, emotion always, always, always wins. And so hypnosis doesn't do logic changing. Let's talk about your feelings. Oh, you're scared of mice. Let's maybe draw a picture or talk about mice and understand mice or indeed spiders. Because logic doesn't work. The emotional mind is going to run the show. And so what hypnosis does is takes you back to a place in time when you acquired a fear, show you what was going on, and then change the perception. You know, you were talking a bit before about language, so was I. And here's the thing, you can choose to be negative and you can choose to be positive, but what you cannot choose is the damage you do to your body when you use negative language. My job is killing me. This kid is driving me insane. My partner makes me want to kill myself. I'm the size of a house. I've got a butt the size of a continent. We say these crazy things and don't understand that the subconscious mind is always listening. It's always on record and it believes everything you tell it. So when you say, oh, if one more person goes and I'm going to kill myself, the subconscious mind believes, oh, you're going to kill yourself if one more person dumps you. My job is to keep you alive, so I'm just going to turn you into a really cold-hearted, solitary person, and now you can never be dumped. When you say to the subconscious, this commute is going to be the death of me, your mind goes, you know what? Why don't I give you chronic diarrhea, panic attacks, because I can't have you go on that commute that you keep saying is killing you. So we really need to understand the subconscious mind is emotional, not logical, and to realize that when we say these things like, oh, I'm losing my shit. I have to say that all the time. It's such a crazy expression because it's not true, but your mind starts to believe it's true. I met this amazing doctor who said, you know, my favorite expression is very British, was this is doing my head in, it's doing my head in, it's doing my head, because I got a brain tumor and I knew that it was what I was saying. And then somebody wrote to me and said, you know, I listen to you talking and what I say every day is I just can't stand it. I can't stand it when my kids don't put the lids on jars. I can't stand it when my husband leaves his clothes all over the floor. And the arches of my feet had collapsed and I was in immense pain. And I stopped saying those words immediately. And guess what happened? My foot arches just went back to normal. How weird is that? Well, that's actually not weird, because your mind uses your words to work out what's going wrong. You know, I've had many people say, oh, you know, this is getting on my nerves and it's driving me crazy. And then they say, and I've got itchy skin or irritable bowel or chronic digestion. And we see a lot of autoimmune diseases now where the body is turning on itself. And a lot of people will think I'm crazy for saying this, but I believe that this self-hatred we have of ourselves, this belief that I've got to look like someone in a magazine, which is all airbrushed and not real. If you go through this self, the way that I'm looking, they go, oh, look at this state of me, look at my hair, look at my skin, I look terrible, I look old or tired. It isn't surprising that when you're practicing self-hatred, you might just get an autoimmune disease. And before you dismiss that out of hand, doctors now say that 70% of patients turning up at A&E have real physical problems that are caused by disease thinking. So many of our modern issues, the panic attacks, the anxiety, are not that your organ is diseased, but your thinking is diseased. You know, we think we're machines with broken parts, but we're people with broken experiences. And so hypnosis is, I think, the most profound way of going back and saying, let's take a look at this. I mean, I'll give you a great example. I met a girl. I met her online because she couldn't leave the house because she had this hypersensitivity to daylight, to sunlight. Any UVA rays would burn her skin. And so she was condemned to staying in the house. She was a coach. She worked from home. And she could only go out at night. And that was a horrible life for her, but she wasn't born like that. And when we went back and had a look at when this began, she said, oh, I was being really bullied at school. And I said to my mum, I don't want to go to school anymore. My mum said, don't be ridiculous. You have to go to school. I have to go. I hate my job. I got to go to work. You got to go to school. Suck it up. And I asked her again, I said, Mum, I'm being really badly bullied. Please, can I stay home? And she said, no. And she said, you know, I long to stay at home. It seems so seductive to stay at home. And then I got this skin issue and I couldn't leave the house. And so what's so interesting is your mind is like the genie and your wish is it someone. When a child goes, I'd never want to leave the house. I want to stay at home. I don't want to leave the house. The mind goes, okay. That's a direct request. In fact, it's a command. And my job is to make that real. So now I'm going to create a way of you never leaving the house. That's an extreme example. We've all done this thing where we go, oh God, what I'd give for a week lying around on the sofa doing nothing. And lo and behold, we get the flu. We've often said things like, oh, I'm dreading next Wednesday. I've got to give a presentation or a speech. I'm taking this exam. And as next Wednesday comes along, we wake up with chronic diarrhea or the flu or a headache because our mind listens and acts to the words we tell it. And all you have to do is change the words. Next Wednesday, got a meeting. It's challenging, but I'm going to be amazing. I know what to say. I'm really good at my job. This commute is a challenge, but hey, I can listen to great audiobooks. I can take time for myself. And my problem, this commute to work on the 405 freeway, someone else's fantasy dream come true. My kid keeps me up at night. Someone on the other side would give anything to have a kid like that. And it doesn't last long. So you got to stop the negative and accentuate the positive. And then your mind doesn't think, wow, you keep saying this job's killing me. My kid's driving me crazy. Now I've got unexplained, but I can't have another kid. Because you keep telling your mind it's killing you. So be aware of how you talk to yourself and understand that although you're choosing the negative, you're not able to choose how that impacts your health. Change your dialogue, change the way you talk to yourself, change the words you use. And it really does change everything. Just something as simple as changing nervous to excited. I'm terrified. I'm excited. This is a nightmare. This is a challenge. This is killing me. This is stretching me. This is driving me insane. Well, my kids just age appropriate. They're awake all night. When they're 15, I wish they were home in bed keeping me up. They leave smeary peanut butter stains all over the counter. But in 10 years, they won't even be here, and I wish they were. So look at the words you use and change them, because it really does change everything. And it's easy, and it's free, and it's kind of almost instant, too.
Oh my gosh, this is such good stuff, Marissa. I'm really enjoying this conversation. So let's stick on mindset a bit. Let's talk about affirmations, which you actually don't call them affirmations. You call them, I think, truth statements or statements of truth. So why don't you call them affirmations? What's wrong with that word?
You know, there's nothing wrong with affirmations, except many of my clients are going to go, hey, I've got an affirmation. I've got a little poster and it says life is a beautiful walk in the park and the sun is always shining. And that's actually not true. Sometimes, you know, the sun isn't shining and you tread in dog mess and it's not what you think it is. And I think statements of truth should be about you. You see, the words that follow I am follow you. And so a statement of truth is say I am and then go, I am positive, I am lovable, I am worthy, I am enough, I am an amazing person, I have something incredible to offer the world. You know, we present something to the mind and it turns around and presents it right back. So when the words that follow I am are I am inadequate, I am useless, I am a failure, I am not enough, you present that, and then sadly, you become it. And so statements of truth are really, what do you want to say about yourself? And it's not an affirmation, it's the truth. Here's the truth about you. You're amazing. You're unique. There's no one else in the world. You have something amazing to offer the world. Even if you don't know it, you have a gift. You're meant to be here. You're meant to be you exactly the way you are. And so when you can begin to go, I am. You know, I love this story about Meryl Streep. She went up for the part in King Kong that Jessica Lange was given. And after her audition, the director said, Meryl, I'm going to tell you the truth. You're not pretty enough for this part. And you're never going to make it in the movies. And you need to go home and do something else. And she said, you know what? That's your opinion. In a sea of opinions, I think I'll go away and find a better opinion. And I love that about her, because when he said no, she said, I'm not letting that in. And if you ever saw one of my favorite films, Out of Africa, where Robert Redford was washing her hair in the bath, she looked so beautiful in that. But, you know, being a great actress is not about just being beautiful. And I love the fact that when he said no, she didn't let that in. So he had a statement of truth, and she said, oh, I got a different statement of truth. I am going to be a phenomenal actress. Someone said to Naomi Campbell, Naomi, you'll never get on the cover of Vogue. That door is shut to black model. She said, shut, I'll kick it open. And that's a statement of truth. It's like, it's not your statement. It's my statement. The director's story was that Meryl wasn't pretty enough. The Vogue story was that a black girl couldn't be on the cover. But that was their story. It wasn't your story. Your mother didn't love you. That's her story. It's not your story. Your story is you're amazing. My parents' story was our son is amazing and our daughter's a disappointment. But that was wasn't my story, that was their story. So that was their statement of truth. It wasn't mine, it was for a while. And I thought, well, I'm going to have a different statement. I'm amazing, got something to offer the world, and I'm here for a reason. And so a statement of truth is, don't pick up someone else. When some person goes, oh, I don't love you anymore, you're not what I want, that's their story. It's not your story. Your story is, well, that's your loss. I'm amazing. And so many people go, yeah, you know, I was dumped. And their story is that I wasn't enough for that person. But the real story is everything they loved in you once is still in you. They didn't pack it in their bag when they left and took it with them. So don't make someone else's story your story. Your dad left before you were born. That's his loss. That doesn't mean you're not amazing and incredible and meant to be here. So the statement of truth is not making someone else's story your story. It's deciding what you want to hear and saying it as a statement of truth. So when you say it with unshakable conviction. You say it with certainty. You don't just write, I'm enough, on a little post-it note and stick it on your fridge. You read it, you say it, you go, I am enough. And you say it in a way that's convincing and powerful. You use that unshakable, unwavering conviction and certainty in your voice. So if you want to believe something about yourself, make it a statement of truth, own it, say it, affirm it, state it. Because what's so amazing is that when you do it so quickly, it stops being what you say. And it really becomes who you are. You know, I've been a therapist my entire adult life. And I've had people come up who don't have a voice, can't speak, are always crying. And in half an hour, almost a different person. They go, wow, I never knew that I could hold my head up and say, I matter, I'm significant, I'm lovable, and I'm enough. And it would become real. So I that's why I call it statements. I find affirmations are not always, but they can be wishy-washy. The sun's every day in every way I'm getting better and better is an affirmation, but that's very vague. What does that even mean? A statement of truth is every day I wake up knowing I matter. I feel great about who I am. I've got a purpose. I'm here for a reason. Don't know what that is, but I know I'm going to find it and live it. And live my best life. So I think statements are just more powerful and more clear than affirmations. Affirmations can be clear. Sometimes they're not. I don't believe in them. I just prefer statements.
Young and profiters, we are all making money. But is your money hustling for you? Meaning, are you investing? Putting your savings in the bank is just doing you a total disservice. You got to beat inflation. I've been investing heavily for years. I've got an E-Trade account. I've got a Robinhood account. And it used to be such a pain to manage all of my accounts. I'd hop from platform to platform. I'd always forget my Fidelity password, and then I have to reset my password. I knew that needed to change because I need to keep track of all my stuff. Everything got better once I started using Yahoo Finance, the sponsor of today's episode. You can securely link up all of your investment accounts in Yahoo Finance for one unified view of your wealth. They've got stock analyst ratings. They have independent research. I can customize charts and choose what metrics I want to display for all my stocks so I can make the best decisions. I can even dig into financial statements and balance sheets of the companies that I'm curious about. Whether you're a seasoned investor or looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Young and profiters, I've been a full-time entrepreneur for about 4 years now, and I finally cracked the code on hiring. I look for character, attitude, and reliability. But it takes so much time to make sure a candidate has these qualities on top of their core skills in the job description. And that's why I leave it to Indeed to do all the heavy lifting for me. Indeed is the most powerful hiring platform out there, and I can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. With Yap Media growing so fast, I've got so much on my plate, and I'm so grateful that I don't have to go back to the days where I was spending hours on all these other different inefficient job sites, because now I can just use Indeed. They've got everything I need. According to US Indeed data, the moment Indeed sponsors a job, over 80% of employers get candidates whose resumes are a perfect match for the position. One of my favorite things about Indeed is that you only have to pay for applications that meet your requirements. No other job site will give you more mileage out of your money. According to Talent Nest 2019, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. Join the more than 3 million businesses worldwide who count on Indeed to hire their next superstar. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/profiting. Offer is good for a limited time. I'm speaking to all you small and medium-sized business owners out there who listen to the show. This is basically free money. You can get a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/profiting. Claim your $75 sponsored job credit now at Indeed.com/profiting. Again, that's Indeed.com/profiting, and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/profiting. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Thanks for listening to Young and Profiting Podcast. I am so happy to have had that conversation with Marissa. I feel so inspired. I learned so much about the power of our words and how they affect our subconscious. Marissa told us that she had an emotionally neglected childhood. Her father was often away, her mother was always sick and having meltdowns, and Marissa realized from a young age that we all take on different roles. Her mother took on the role of the sick one. Her father took on the academic role, and she took on the caring role. During this time in her life, she realized that we are only needing one person to believe in ourselves. For me, that person was my father. For her, that was her grandmother. If you don't have that, we can try to find that one person who will believe in us. This might sound intimidating, especially if you have nobody in your life, but the only way to attract that person is to start loving yourself. We try so hard to make people love us instead of focusing on our own self-love and care. Marissa said, it's hard to find someone who believes in you when you don't believe in yourself. To love ourselves, we have to forget about the statement, I am not enough, and start speaking positively into our lives. We are the ones that tear ourselves down the most. We all have life experiences that have damaged our confidence or self-esteem. It's never too late to have a happy childhood, to be a parent to yourself, or to recover from the past. Marissa reminded me that the most important thing that everyone wants is reassurance. Ask yourself, what are the words that I want and I need to hear? And then say them to yourself. over and over and over again. Marissa knows that emotion always wins the battle over logic. When our emotions are heightened, we tend to start speaking negativity into our lives. You cannot choose the damage that you do to your body when you use negative language. Our subconscious mind is always listening. When we say horrible things like I'm losing it or you're killing me, our mind starts to believe that it's true. Your mind can't tell the difference between a truth and a lie. To negate these negative thoughts, we have to say affirmations and statements of truth to ourselves instead. Compliment yourself and shut out all that unnecessary noise around you. The statement of truth is not making someone else's story your story. It's saying what you want to hear with unshakable certainty in a way that is convincing and powerful. Tune in next week to hear the second part of this amazing and inspiring interview with Marissa Peer, and we'll continue the conversation about being enough and accepting self-praise. Now, as always, I want to end this episode giving a 5-star review to one of our Apple Podcasts reviewers. And if you didn't know, Apple Podcast reviews are the number one way to thank us here at Young and Profiting Podcast. It is a free and effective way to support the show. It impacts our social ranking. It impacts people listening to the show and feeling motivated to listen. And it's a great way to show your support. It is the best way to thank us, honestly. It is my favorite thing to read your reviews. It keeps me motivated. This week's shout out goes to Greta Simo, and she says, Queen Halataha. I love Young and Profiting Podcast so much. Hala is a dedicated professional who has such a fascinating background and career journey. She truly cares about giving back to her listeners, and she is such a role model to me. Wow, thank you so much, Greta, for your amazing review. I'm so happy to hear that you believe that I'm your role model, and I hope to continue to inspire you. I hope that you continue to listen to Yap Podcast to level up your life. And to everybody out there tuning in, if you find value in Young and Profiting Podcast, take a moment, drop us a 5-star review, show us some love, give us your feedback. I love to hear from our listeners. Go ahead, drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you don't have access to Apple, drop us a review on CastBox. We have almost 150,000 subscribers on CastBox. So if you're listening on that app, go ahead, drop us a comment. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know what you think about the show. If you listen every week, I want to shout you out on the podcast. Take time to leave us a review. And you guys can also find me on social media. You can find me on Instagram at Yap with Hala or LinkedIn. Just search for my name, Hala Taha. And speaking of Instagram, go ahead, take a screenshot of this app, upload it to your Instagram story, tag me at Yap with Hala. Show me that you listened to the end of this episode. Show me that you feel inspired, motivated, and then let's chop it up in the DMs. I love to talk to my listeners. Big thanks to the Yap team as always. This is Hala signing off.